Everybody, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Revis and Butthead podcast. Sorry about the little hiatus. I would not recommend having ACL surgery and doing medical school at the same time. Brutal idea. So last week, Joe summarized the offensive line and graded them. Little solo show. Today, we're back together and we're summarizing the skill groups. We're going to start by going with the tight ends. Joe, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, and I just want to throw it out there that I'm very glad that you're finally back in this episode because talking to myself in that episode it was quite weird. Usually there's some sort of back and forth, and there were definitely some pauses, and I was waiting for an answer, and then nobody would answer. So welcome back, Hussein.
I'm not gonna lie, in an offensive line episode, you would have done 95% of the talking anyways. Like who are we kidding? Even if I was there.
I mean, you're probably not wrong, but just hearing your voice occasionally and answering some of the things that I say, it kind of warms my heart a little.
Does my voice soothe you? Is that it?
I think so, because I don't know if I'm cut out for the solo business after that first after that offensive line episode, even though offensive line is my thing to look at. But
I think you did great, buddy. It was great.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. Diving right into the tight ends. I'm just gonna put a point blank. They sucked. They were not good, and that includes Tyler Croft and Ryan Griffin. They were just, both of them were just awful players. Tyler Croft, he was a below average to average blocker at best. Run blocking, he would constantly miss players, and he would be the reason why a lot of these plays were blown up in the backfield. No ability to stay healthy, and he's always hurt, and we saw that this year, and we knew that coming into this year, he was always hurt, and he signed with the Jets. And again, he was for the most part hurt for the season, and just not a good player. Ryan Griffin, it's the same thing. Horrible blocker. He would take such bad angles in the run game. It honestly looked like Ashton Davis was playing offense for a second. It was that bad. but it's just really bad. It's not good. It's pitiful. These aren't NFL starting tight ends. And in an offense where the Jets want to emphasize tight ends so much, it's just, it ain't it. And this room needs to improve. This can't be the starting tight end group next year. Hussein, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, I'm still laughing at the Ashton Davis thing. I was hilarious.
We all know it's true.
I did not see that coming. No, it's just so right. That was not the comparison I was, you know, prepared for. Like, honestly, we were better off, like, putting out a rock at tight end this season than starting Ryan Griffin and Tyler Croft. Patrick Starr, good coach. The thing that upset me the most is that probably the best throw of Zach Wilson's career against Houston was that little bootleg to the left, and he threw it to the back corner of the end zone perfectly over the defender, right into Ryan Griffin's lap, who was like, no, I don't feel like catching the ball today.
Yeah, he just saw the football. He's like, nah, fam, I ain't catching this.
For God's sake, I could have caught that with one leg. I mean, come on.
Why would I make my rookie QB's life easy? I'm just going to drop it and make his life more difficult. And not even that. It was his first game after that PCL injury that he came back. And it's like, no, I'm just gonna throw Zach Wilson right in the fire and just play incompetently. And he did exactly that in that game.
It was probably like one of the best throws, if not one, like, yeah, probably one of the best throws of his entire season.
Yeah, and it was all improvisation. It was, I don't mean to make the comparison directly to the player, but it was kind of shades of Russell Wilson improvising or Aaron Rodgers, who was able to flush out of the pocket and find someone in the end zone with some space. And Ryan Griffin, man, you got to put your fat hands on the ball and catch it. You know, that's just all there is to it.
How about Russell Wilson to Denver, man? We didn't even get to talk about that yet.
No, that's huge news.
First-round picks? They traded more for Jamal Adams than they got back for Russell Wilson.
Douglas is out here destroying franchises. That's just more, what he does.
Like, an equivalent amount of first-round picks for Russell Wilson than you got that you gave up for Jamal Adams? Like, you're kidding me, right?
It's insane. Joe Douglas is out here destroying franchises. It's honestly insane because Jamal Adams for two firsts, and we got – everyone needs to be reminded that we also got back a NFL caliber starting safety.
And a safety. I mean,
we got a body back to
we got play. A body. I can't wait till I see the notification in 2 days. It just heard a fifth round pick for Amari Cooper and know it's going to happen. I can't wait to see it.
I am a little worried though, because Joe Douglas, if he is so good at fleecing all these GMs, nobody's going to want to trade with him.
Man, I'm just afraid of getting burned.
Yeah. Hey,
all right.
I saw that.
I saw a thing on Twitter that said Seattle might be afraid to trade DK to the Jets because they just got like beat down so badly the first time they traded with him. They don't want it to happen to them again.
I don't blame them, honestly, because that trade with Joe Douglas, it honestly sunk their franchise.
Okay, so in summary, tight ends suck. Joe Douglas rocks.
Yeah.
So moving on to running backs. Let's start with the big boy, Michael Carter. I was a huge fan of Carter coming into the draft. He was like my big, like a sleeper. I want this guy. I thought on draft night when we traded the 2 third-round picks, I'm like, there goes our chance of getting him. No chance this guy makes it to round 4. We got really lucky. Joe knows how much I love this guy coming out of UNC. I thought he was a perfect fit.
Oh, he loved him.
I loved him. So Carter's full stat line this season, he ran for 640 yards, received 325 and 4 total scores. But his numbers were a little weird this year. Early in the year, and we were all like just so upset about it, he just didn't get touches. It kind of progressed later on in the year, kind of peaking at that Mike White game he had, but he just didn't really get touches until later on in the year, and he still turned that into 640 yards on the ground. And he put up 640 yards on the ground while playing 14 games. And 14 games is not even a full 14, because if you remember correctly, say like that Tampa Bay game, he left after 3 carries. Buffalo, who he only got 9 carries. Week 1 against Carolina, he got 4 carries. So you're not even looking at a full 14 games. Now, I don't think Carter's the type of RB1, can touch the ball 25 times a game, workload back, but he should get at least consistently 15 touches a game. And when he got 15 touches, he put up close to about 80 to 100 scrimmage yards. So what I did for a few of these guys is, and this will be a theme for this episode, is I took their stats with their games played and extrapolated it over an entire season. What it would be if, you know, God forbid, the Jets could stay healthy for 17 games. I know, crazy concept, right?
It's insane.
So, insane. If Michael Carter could stay healthy for 17 games this year, his stats would have came out to 940 yards on the ground, 490 through the air. And that's looking at a overall 1,400-yard player, or close to it, which is – I can't remember the last time we could say that about a Jets running back, 1,400 total yards.
It's been a very long time since we've ever had something like that. Curtis Martin is probably the last one, or
– probably, yeah.
Yeah, or Thomas Jones, one of those.
The one thing I will say about Carter, and I don't know if this is an indictment on him or the offense, is that he was not used in the passing game as much as I thought he could be used or should have been used. Besides that Mike White game where he had 9 grabs for 95 yards, he wasn't used in the offense as much passing-wise. Even when Zach Wilson came back in the second half, he peaked at 3 targets. He never topped even 10 total receiving yards. Besides that one big game against the Bengals receiving, he didn't do much through the air. And I'm hoping for more out of him, or maybe a better compliment. James Cook. James Cook. But I can't complain with what you saw from Carter this year as a rookie. I mean, the guy just didn't go down on first contact ever. So happy with what I saw from him. Your take, Joe?
I am honestly ecstatic on how Michael Carter looked this year. And I think the major reason behind his limited touches in the passing game just really comes down to like what you alluded to earlier, is that he's not really running back you want to have in the 20 touch range. And considering the Jets were very thin at running back throughout the year, I feel like they were okay with having Michael Carter as the guy who was taking most of the handoffs on the ground. And even though it didn't work out, we'll get to this in a couple minutes, but Ty Johnson as a third down back just plainly didn't work out. But I love what I saw from Michael Carter. You said it yourself. His contact balance is insane. My mind always goes back to that play against the Patriots when the Jets were very clearly out of the game. No chance they were going to come back in it. And he caught one of those sideline outright running routes that a running back usually runs from the backfield. And he was grabbed by the leg and almost twisted. And he was able to stay on his 2 feet and break that tackle for, I think it was a first down that he gained and more. So
he did that a lot this year.
Yeah, if he can keep doing that, he's got my full blessing to be the at least RB1A or RB1B of this team, depending on how the New York Jets decide to fill out that running back room. But I think that what I like about Michael Carter the most is, along with his contact balance, he's so elusive. He breaks so many tackles. And it's just the Jets definitely didn't give him any room to run, especially in the beginning of the year. But he fought for every single yard, and he tried to break as many tackles as he could. And you could really see the effort pop off the screen when he had the ball in his hands. And that part right there just made me fall in love with him immediately. But something that I also noticed in watching him is that his acceleration is real. And I saw it in his college tape, and I'm sure you did too, saying at UNC, is that when he gets the ball after the initial handoff, he is able to get from 0 to 60 really quickly and hit through and get through the hole. But the only downside to Michael Carter is that he doesn't have that next gear, right?
That's what I was just thinking. Yeah.
Like once he hits that 60 miles per hour, that's it. He's kind of topped out, you know, and he got caught behind on a lot of runs, but listen, he gives you so much juice in the wide zone running scheme. I think the Jets need to target either someone that is legit track speed, or if they want to go the power back route, those are the two routes that they need to go. And Hussein, before I throw it over back to you, we just got some free agency news.
Oh, really? What's that?
Not a big signing, but the Jets re-signed LaMarcus Joyner.
Really?
Yes, to a one-year deal.
I like it. I like it. I like it. Wow. No, we were just talking about that. He's somebody I would absolutely bring back. Yeah, really happy with LaMarcus Joyner. We talked about it. We really wanted to bring him back. The man tore his triceps tendon. Like, that's not a very common injury. That's not like a reoccurring injury.
I feel like that takes some skill to do on the NFL
dude, field. You like have to do it on purpose. Like, but we needed bodies back there. And honestly, like, we know Salah loved him. We know, like, he kind of got moved around in Oakland in spots where he wasn't comfortable, but like as a single high, like he's a legit NFL safety. So it kind of like takes away the need of like sign one, draft one early, like still sign one, still go after like Marcus Williams or whatever. But the need to sign one in round two kind of like goes away. Maybe you can sign one in round four, kind of like a Verone McKinley from Oregon who plays center field, and let him sit for a year behind LaMarcus Joyner before he takes over. Like, you're not rushed to start a rookie at safety anymore.
Yeah, and he's a perfect stopgap. He's someone with experience, especially in that young secondary, to at least provide a lot of experience to these young guys who are just in the NFL, learning the league, learning the position, learning the ins and outs of what makes an NFL corner or NFL safety an NFL safety or corner. So I like this deal. I'm very curious to see what the money comes out to be, but I'm sure it's not going to be much. I would probably ballpark it about around $1 million or $2 million.
I was going to say too. Yeah. So I'd say realistically, their plan in safety now should be sign a guy who can kind of go both ways, Marcus Williams, and then draft LaMarcus Joyner's replacement in like round three or four. We like the guys there. We have guys like Leon O'Neal. We have guys like Rome McKinley. We have guys like Kirby Joseph from Illinois, who's also a ball hawk. There's a lot of safeties we can get on day three who, I would be very upset if Kirby Joseph starting in center field day one, right? Like, if that's how it turned out, not very upset if he won the job, good for him. But like, if all we did was get him to play center field with no competition, yeah, I'd be upset. But now you can let him battle it out. If say you get Kirby Joseph and he beats out LaMarcus Joyner, good, he deserves it. But now I kind of have that insurance with him. I love that something actually broke in the middle of an episode. I never thought this would happen.
Honestly, I always listen to other podcasts, especially with like Connor Rogers or like Joe Caparoso or even Play Like a Jet. And it rarely happens when they break news in the middle of a podcast or when they're recording, and kind of surprised it happened this quickly. I mean, we did start during the off season, so it kind of makes sense.
I don't remember which podcast I was listening to last year, but like they're just breaking down the Corey Davis signing mid podcast. They signed Carl Lawson. I would have lost it on a podcast if we signed Carl Lawson.
Yeah, I would have too.
Lost it. Okay. But
let's get back on track. What do you think?
We are talking about Carter's long speed. Yes. So something I really thought, like, his tape at UNC showed long speed. It showed him running away from defenders, and he wasn't playing against nobodies. He was playing in the ACC, and he's breaking away for those long touchdown runs. So I was a little shocked by the lack of long speed at the NFL level. We were there at that game in Jacksonville where he had the chance to like put the game away. He got tackled inside the five because he just didn't have the long speed. It happened against Tampa Bay. He got chased down by, I think it was Antoine Winfield, where he could add a long 75-yard touchdown. He needs that next gear. And I think you need a running back who can complement him. The only unfortunate thing is in this draft, there are no true running backs, I think, that have a next gear.
So, I mean, there are some running backs that definitely have great speed in terms of top long speed, but there aren't really any track stars, right? Like there's no Raheem Mostert in this draft.
A difference between great speed, because I think Carter is very good to potentially great speed, but there's a difference from great speed to outrun the entire defense speed. Moving on to from running backs, you basically said everything I could ever want to say about Ty Johnson. Tevin Coleman, we talked about him earlier. He was great this year for $1 million. You bring him back for $1 million, I'll be happy. Bring him back for anything more, I'll be pretty upset. That's all I could say about Tevin Coleman.
No, I'd have to 100% agree with that. But I do also would like to make a point in that I see a lot of people, especially on the Jets Twitter land, that they really are hyper-focused on a power back. And I don't, although I would like the idea of having a power back along with Michael Carter, but I don't think it's an absolute need like some people are making it out to be. Because if you look at the San Francisco running backs room, who's the power back?
There is none. Kyle Juszczyk, maybe?
Kyle Juszczyk is, but he doesn't even play running back. He's an H-back. He lines up in wing.
The closest thing they have to a power back.
Absolutely. He is the closest thing they have to a power back. The other guys, they're all speed. I mean, maybe you can argue Trey Sermon has some power to his game, but even then, Elijah Mitchell, burner. Raheem Mostert, burner. You know, like, I feel like a power back in this system isn't all that necessary. It's a nice to have, but I think what's more important is to have someone who can, one, contribute consistently in the passing game, and two, who can find that next level or next gear of speed and can run away from the defense.
So let's get to the real meat and potatoes of the skill position group, the wide receivers.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh. Let's start with saying Keelan Cole, Jameson Crowder, you guys are fun. Jameson Crowder, thank you for 2 or 3 great seasons. It's a lot of fun. Keelan Cole, you had some great grabs in that Tennessee game. Goodbye. All I got to say with them. See ya.
But I will say that Crowder deserves a little bit more respect, considering he was one of the few lone bright spots on the 2019-2020 Jets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was great for us, but
he was a lone bright spot on those teams.
Just not more of a fit. And we gave enough of our thoughts about Braxton Berrios in the mock offseason episode and rumors episodes. It'd be kind of counterproductive just keep talking about him, no matter how attractive I think he is. So let's hit the guy who we really want to talk about. Let's start with a guy who was a bit of a disappointment this year in a lot of the fans' eyes, Corey Davis. Joe, what do you think about Corey Davis?
You know, I think Corey Davis did definitely disappoint this year. I need to see him catch the ball consistently. And the thing that really was boggling of my mind was that really was never an issue for him in Tennessee or even his college tape. And
never.
It seems like whenever the Jets sign somebody, there always becomes some sort of issue that becomes apparent in their game that was never seen before. Like Corey Davis, just he starts wearing green and white and suddenly just starts to drop the ball. It's just, I don't really get it. I don't know what's happening. It's most likely mental, and probably because he went from Ryan Tannehill, who probably doesn't throw the ball with much velocity, to Zach Wilson, who tries to rip it wherever he's throwing the ball. But aside from the whole catching the ball consistently, his best work is in the intermediate part of the field. You know, he's not going to beat you over the top. He's not really someone you really want to throw a lot of smoke screens to. He does give you some breaking tackle ability, but it's not consistent or elite in any way, shape, or form. But he's also a good blocker in the run game. He does a good job doing that, and he opens some good lanes on the outside for Michael Carter to run through on the outside. So I think there are some improvements that need to be made to his game, but I do want to say that if he struggles again next year, he can very well be a cap casualty.
Oh yeah.
And he arguably should be. And in my opinion, the Jets need to plan as if he may not be on the roster next year, especially with what we saw from him this past season. So if there's anything to really see about this receiver room, especially as we continue on to other receivers, is that they need to add a whole lot of bodies to this room who can play at a high level for Zach Wilson. Hussein, what are your thoughts on Corey Davis?
So I have a lot and they're kind of mixed. Here's the first thing I want to say, and I feel like this happens to damn near every guy I target. The first thing I look at with like prospective free agents is availability. Do you miss games? Are you there for the full season? Like, what's that word? Corey Davis, 3 years leading up to free agency with the Jets before signing, he missed 3 games in 3 years. Came to the Jets, just magically got hurt and missed 8. Why does that happen to us? Always. Always happens to us.
Because we're the Jets, Hussein. It's just injuries find us, dropped balls find us, missed penalties by the refs find us. It's just the Jets are an attractive organization for terrible things.
So I will say, you hit it on the nail with Corey Davis's biggest problem. It was drops. What I think, if you notice his time with Tennessee, his best year obviously was the year before he signed with us when he put up 984 yards and 5 scores. Corey Davis is at his best when the defense forgets about him and he's not their main concern.
When he's wide receiver two.
Forget wide receiver two, when he's option number three. He was option number three in the Tennessee offense behind A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry. You add a big-time number one receiver, say Amari Cooper, then it's Amari Cooper, then Elijah Moore, then Corey Davis. And I'm telling you right now, if Corey Davis is your number three receiver, then that's a really damn good thing and the defense is in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to have a little bit of a Dallas Cowboys offensive remote makeover to this team to get three legitimate wide receiver targets out on the field at the same time and even have a good running back in the backfield, because the defense can't game plan for all of that. We saw it with Dallas. We see it with Cincinnati, especially with Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon, all of those guys. We need to get a lot of playmakers out on the field at the same time.
And in that sense, for Corey Davis, when he's the defense's number one attention, when the pressure's on him, I don't trust him to win. I don't trust him to beat man coverage. And that's, you can see that directly by the New England game. The first game against New England, he had 2 grabs for 8 yards. The second game against New England, he had 4 grabs for 47 yards. Yeah, he had the touchdown pass on Mike White's first ever pass attempt. God. But he just, against man coverage, when he's the number one target, he just can't get it done. And that's something you need a number one receiver to do, win in that scenario.
Absolutely. The Jets just need that wide receiver one. They need that X receiver. They need that guy who could just bully defenders and just get open, whether it's route running, whether it's physicality. We just need that difference maker in that room, because we get that guy in that room and everyone else will improve around him because the attention is going to be on him. So the Jets, you know what to do. You got to do it.
Here's the thing. When we did have a full receiver room, there's against Tennessee, you know, we had, I think, everyone but Elijah Moore healthy. And there was, so Crowder, Cole were there full time. There was less looks on Corey Davis, and he just exploded that game against Tennessee. So when the pressure's not on him, when the eyes aren't on him, that's when he does his best. I will say about Corey Davis, his numbers were better than the eye test. His season numbers for the season, 34 grabs, 490 yards, 4 touchdowns. But he played 9 games. You push that over 17 games, you're looking at 61 grabs, 890 yards, and 7 scores. Now, if that was Corey Davis's final stat line of the season, yes, we're still probably upset. We're pessimistic, but we're feeling much better about him. So just keep that in mind as well. That his game per game basis over a full 17 was good this season.
But like you alluded to earlier in this episode, is that availability is your best ability. So if he needs to do his best to stay healthy next year, because we could be having a very different conversation about Corey Davis. But
yeah,
I would like to move on. Are you good? Have you said everything you wanted to say about Corey Davis?
Just, goddamn core surgery. Like, what does core surgery even mean?
You're the medical student. You should tell me.
So I literally don't know. That's the problem. That's what he missed the entire year with core surgery. Yikes. All right, let's move on.
Moving on. We get to the real receiver on the Jets roster that we really want to talk about. And that's
for last, baby.
Oh, that's for last. All right.
That's for last.
I guess we'll save it. No, what?
We're talking about the same guy. Who are you going to talk about?
I was going to talk about Elijah Moore.
Yeah. Best for last. That's it. Who else do you want to talk about? What other receivers did we talk about?
Oh, I feel like we have to discuss Denzel Mims.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Well,
can't say that with a straight face.
Listen, it's not like he's going to be, well, he could be released. I wouldn't bat an eyelash if he was released, but all I'm going to say is he's going to be on the team most likely for next season. So he should be discussed.
Okay. That's a fair point.
Even if he's not a full-time starter, he should still be discussed. And all I'm going to say about Denzel Mims is was it a season to forget? Keep him away from salmon for Christ's sakes. Just he can't eat fish anymore. Just don't let it happen. And low effort, such low effort. And that was one of his issues in college, was that he was reportedly lazy at times while playing. And unfortunately, watching back the tape, it kind of appears that way. He's got slow feet. He doesn't move them very quickly. And you know what Ocho Cinco likes to say, slow feet don't eat. So, and even there was even a recording of him doing ladder work during Jets practice. And you watch the receiver ahead of him go. I don't remember who it was.
He goes Berrios.
It was Berrios. And you see him, you know, he's got quick feet, all good, happy, joy. And then you see Denzel Mims come in for the exercise. And I look like I can move my feet faster than him, honestly, with that. And honestly, Hussein could probably move his feet faster than that after his ACL surgery that he just had. So, yeah,
that's where I was going.
Yeah, honestly. But he really needs to fix his mental
part. That's it. I'm not going to add anything.
I feel like I addressed everything.
Don't need to add anything to that. Now, the best for last.
The main event. Well, at least of the wide receivers.
Elijah Moore, baby.
Let's go, man.
Okay, I will say, I was so upset when he started the season so slow, like just crazy. Like, that's what happens when you're a rookie who misses most of training camp and preseason.
Yeah.
But he started really slow.
Also Zach Wilson, because he just couldn't play in the beginning of the year.
He was a tale of two halves, even more than Zach Wilson, man. So Elijah Moore's final game log this year, he played 11 games, 43 grabs, 540 yards, and 5 touchdowns this year. But about 90% of all those numbers came in a 6-game stretch. So let's break down that 6-game stretch, shall we? Because this is what we're really here for.
Let's move right in.
That 6-game stretch, we had Cincinnati, Indianapolis on Thursday night, Buffalo, Miami, Houston, and Philadelphia before he got hurt and then missed the rest of the year because, once again, nobody in the Jets can ever stay healthy and nothing good ever happens to us in our lives.
We can never, as Jets fans, have anything nice in life.
No, we literally never can. How is it possible for everyone we get to just get hurt?
Carl Lawson, torn Achilles. Zach Wilson.
Torn Achilles, for God's sakes.
Not even a torn ACL at minimum. You know, it has to be a torn Achilles.
Elijah Moore also stayed healthy in college. Like, no injury issues in college. Just doesn't add up.
It just doesn't mathematology. I think what a lot of people tend to forget is that when you compare the college season to the NFL season, there's so many more games in the NFL season and compared to college. You know, we're talking about 17 games, and players are faster. They're more physical. They hit harder.
So, Joe, do you want to hear Elijah Moore's stats from that 6-game stretch?
Lay it on me.
34 grabs, 459 yards, 5 touchdowns. In a 6-game stretch, he was like top 5 in everything: catches, yards, touchdowns among all receivers in football. He was like legitimately start. Like, he was a player people wanted in fantasy football during that stretch. Like, when's the last time a Jets receiver has won in fantasy football? Brandon Marshall in 2015.
Yeah, the one season, not even multiple seasons.
At one season.
Yeah, maybe Eric Decker is the closest.
He's a guy closest who. One. I said this about Corey Davis, and I don't trust him in that sense. I trust Elijah Moore to win in man coverage. He did it against Miami. I trust him, if a zero blitz is coming, to win.
Absolutely. Jets just need more receivers who can win against man coverage. Just
win. So I know this has been talked about a lot. So if Elijah Moore, those 6-game, obviously this is just like just for fun. This will make us feel really good about ourselves. But you want to hear if that Elijah Moore 6-game stretch got pushed to 17?
Yeah, let's hear it.
What his final stat line is? 95 catches, 1,280 yards, 14 touchdowns. That's the pace he was on.
That's kind of hot.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Now, do me a favor. Just so you give the listeners some context, why don't you extrapolate the first half of the season over 17 games?
Okay. You need me to pull out a calculator here in the middle
of
this?
Yeah. While you go off and calculate that, I'm just going to talk about Elijah Moore for a little bit. And
this is so messed up.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here doing freaking math.
I'm giving you a task and you're doing it. This is what you have to pay for when you miss an episode and I have to talk by myself. It's only payback, you know. But Elijah Moore, he is so shifty. He has such good yak ability with the ball in his hands after the catch. He made so many guys miss on just those simple end arounds. And the Jets need that. The Jets need people who can make people miss. I'm so tired of watching receivers who go down when they're hit after first contact. It's just, you need to make people miss in the NFL. You can't be a Zach Ertz and never break a tackle ever. And along with that, he makes it easy to get the ball in his hands because he's such a crisp route runner against man coverage. He destroys man coverage. Hussein is raising his hands.
I did the math.
You did the math. Okay. Let's hear it.
26 grabs, 350 yards, one rushing, and four touchdowns.
Now, let me ask you this. Does that include games where he did not play at all? Or was that games where he was actually a part of
that was in the first half every of the game he was active, except the Atlanta game where he left early with an injury and only got two targets and zero catches on those two targets.
Okay. So
that's over four games.
So let me ask you this. You said it was around 1,200 yards for the second half of the season. And then for the first half of the season,
360.
Yeah. That's quite a big gap, but there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, Zach Wilson didn't play well. He was hurt. He was
Elijah Moore's hurt too.
And preseason. So a lot of factors go into that.
So basically we're expecting 1,200 yards from Elijah Moore next year and anything less is a failure.
You can expect 1,200 yards next year. I, on the other hand, do not want to be thoroughly disappointed.
I live for disappointments.
Sometimes you have to look up in life, and that's Hussein, everybody.
Man, Elijah Moore was great this year. That Miami touchdown he had, those two scores he had against Indianapolis, that first one where Mike White was still healthy, I was going nuts because he won that little like slot fade. He scored the touchdown on the RPO against the Eagles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
The Jets ran a well-designed RPO on the goal line. Who are they?
This isn't Jets offense. Well run and efficient offense that we were seeing in the Eagles game. What?
In the red zone?
In the red zone, especially?
I'm scared. Mom, pick me up.
Mom, pick me up. What do I do with myself? I have such conflicting feelings. I've never felt this feeling before. No, but in all seriousness, the one thing I do want to say about Elijah Moore that I feel like I really want him to approve is that I want to see him catch the ball securely when there's guys around him in traffic, not contested catches. Because he's what? 5'10", 5'9".
5'10", 178. I'm bigger and way more than him. Yeah.
I'm not expecting him to go up and win the ball in contested catches, but I just want to see him have the ability to catch the ball with bodies around him.
Taking a hit. Yeah,
absolutely. And take a hit. I just need to see that. Because that would truly take him to the next level.
I would love to see him outside and inside. That's why I want somebody like Amari Cooper who can play outside and inside, and Elijah Moore can play outside and inside, and Corey Davis can play outside and inside, and you can put everyone everywhere all the time, and it would just be so much fun.
Right. And the one complaint I do have about the Jets offense is that I felt like they were too chained to the receiver roles that they assigned to each of the receivers.
Too organized, in a word.
They didn't move anybody around. You didn't really see Corey Davis move into the slot or any of that really.
By the book, right?
Absolutely. I want to see certain players in the slot in certain formations just so you can take advantage of some matchups that you see on film.
So do you have anything else to say about Elijah Moore or the receivers in general?
You know, I feel like we covered it all, honestly. There really isn't a whole lot else to say about Elijah Moore. You know, I said everything I needed to say.
Let's hit some grades. Let's start by grading the tight end room.
F.
D minus, 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 minus. That's only because I don't want to give the same grade as you. It's kind of lame.
No, you can agree. It's fine because we've disagreed plenty of other times on this podcast.
Fine.
And we will disagree plenty of times on this podcast.
F.
If I can give them a grade of a G, which is lower than an F, I would give it to them.
Wow.
All right, so Hussein, what grade are you giving the running backs?
Running backs? Okay, I'm not going to be super optimistic here. I love the way Carter played. Just couldn't stay healthy. Stay healthy for 17 games, this grade probably bumps up a whole letter. I'm going to put him at a C+.
Oh, man. I have to agree 100% with that grade C+. And I feel like that's more the grade is more C+ because of Ty Johnson more than it is Michael Carter being good.
And if it was like,
because Ty Johnson single-handedly destroyed like a whole first half of a game because he couldn't catch a ball.
Oh my God, I remember. What game was that?
I think it was the Texans game.
He had three drops. It was horrifying.
It was disgustingly bad. It was just awful. Never want to see that happen again. But yeah, C+ for me.
Okay, I'll go first for the receivers then, because that's, I guess, the chain we're going with here. Receivers, now do you want me to grade the room as a whole or individually?
As a whole.
As a whole?
I feel like that was a little more tough.
Yeah, that is a little more tough. I'm going right back. Nope, I'm actually going to drop them to a C.
I'm not going to say exactly a C.
Don't say
it. I was thinking more along the lines of a C-, just because there were some games where none of the receivers can separate whatsoever. And that even includes Elijah Moore, where he just couldn't get a whole lot of separation. He couldn't really get anything going. And a lot of it does hurt when Zach Wilson just isn't seeing the field like he should. But and plus, I will never forget watching the Denver game. And I literally watched three receivers. They were in a bunch formation on the right, and I watched them all run the same exact route.
Oh, that was hilarious. Yeah, somebody messed up.
They all ran that like trail slant kind of route. It wasn't someone messed up. It was two people messed up because one person should be running that route, not three. So one person got it right. And I don't know who was where, but whoever was on the line of scrimmage in the bunch was likely running the drag, and the person who was closest to the tight end / tackle was probably running that trail slant route.
I always say that, especially when it comes to like rooms like that, you're as good as like your weakest link usually. And yeah, I guess Keelan Cole isn't the worst weakest link, but he had a down year this year compared to what he was in the past.
Yeah, he wasn't that great this year.
I thought he'd be better coming in. He had a good 500 yard year with Jacksonville, which is saying something with Jacksonville last year.
Right. And maybe a lot of that can be contributed to garbage time stats.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Still, Elijah Moore plays 17 games. Corey Davis plays 17 games. That C grade's probably closer to a B, but they were in. Let's hope they trade for Amari Cooper and all three of them play 17 games, and that grade will be an A next year. But for now, it's a C for me.
Us fans can only hope. Well, Hussein can hope.
I can hope.
Yeah, he carries the hope for the both of us.
I'm on my phone just constantly refreshing Twitter, just waiting for that. The Jets have traded for Amari Cooper, give up a fifth round pick. That's all I'm waiting for.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of Jets fans should pretend to screw with their friends and send a tweet to the group chat saying, "Oh my gosh, look what happened!" You know, all in caps with a bunch of exclamation points, just to get them to
just say, "Look what happened." No context.
It's yeah, chaos. Look what happened. Nope. Give no context. Just to mess with your friends.
Well, that's it for this episode. We talked about all the skill position groups. That concludes our entire graded reviews on the offense. Probably after the free agent frenzy, we'll be hitting the defense, going once again, breakdown by position groups, D-line, linebackers, and secondary. But we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Give us likes, comments, retweets, anything. Me and Joe kind of agreed as a whole in this episode. If you disagree with us, agree with us, let us know. Have a good night, guys.
Good night, guys.